Welcome to TJ Frog's podcast, where I chat about my knitting, Dorset buttons and creativity in general, as well as sharing my love of Scotland, especially the Highlands and Islands. Hello, I'm Tanya, aka TJ Frog, or sometimes called the Button Lady. And in my creative business, I predominantly make and promote the traditional craft of Dorset buttons, which dates back to the early 1600s, a cottage industry that employed many people in Dorset on the south coast of England. Brought up in Dorset, I now live on the Isle of Skye, and wherever you may be in the world, welcome, and thank you for joining me for my 45th episode, Summertime. Sunshine, warmth, long light hours, day trips to your favourite places, time outside, gardens blooming, fun times, catching up with family and friends, holidays, sea and sand, ice creams. What does summertime mean to you? I expect many more things than what I've just mentioned. It will mean something different to all of us, especially right now for those of us who live in the Northern Hemisphere coming towards the end of our summer. Here in the Highlands, the children have just returned to school after their summer holidays, while many of the English schools are into the second half of their summer holidays now. And if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, you may well be planning ahead your activities when your summertime unfolds at the latter part of the year. For us, summertime is usually an opportunity to take our foot off the pedal and slow down a bit. Although having said that, the last 10 weeks or so seem to have been packed full with photographic events, a juicing retreat, visiting family and friends, a family wedding, a course, teaching Dorset buttons, research, and doing lots and lots of house and garden jobs that have piled up. Let's dive into this episode then and see what pops up around the theme of summertime. The weather, not very summery. Creativity, low productivity here, albeit always thinking about it. Dorset buttons and wider news from the TJ Frog pad. The first TJ Frog Chats With podcast episode, Shetland Wool Week and workshops. Skye Focus. What might impact tourism during summertime? The weather. I've thought a lot about the seasons recently from a lot of different perspectives. The weather, the activities that we do, how we feel, and how often we can have certain seasonal days completely outside the seasonal norm. I'm hearing a lot of people in Skye and other parts of the UK talk about what an awful summer it's been weather-wise. As I've mentioned before, living in Skye, we often experience all four seasons in one day, and it's part of living here, and we embrace that. In March, I was out wearing a sundress, and in July, I've worn my woolly bear-hugging jumper quite a few times. I think the general consensus is it's been a cold summer. Here in our little corner of Skye, it feels like we've just entered winter. Never mind autumn, I'm not sure where that went to. We finally relented and three nights now this week the log burner has gone on. Once or twice I've really got caught out with what I've been wearing when I've gone out. Woolly fleece lined boots, thick winter coat, woolly hat. And then the wind drops, the rain subsides, the sun breaks through the clouds, and suddenly there's a hint of summer back again. And of course, all the layers start to come off. And then you get the complete opposite. Going out thinking it was far warmer than it was and getting really chill inside. And with sunrise now just past 6 o'clock and sunset around 20:50, on the not so good weather days, we really feel the days drawing in. It gets really dark very early on. Sometimes this summer I've had to remind myself it's June or July or August, as I could swear it was November or January or March. It's all out of sync. But hey, summertime it is. And the Northern Lights have been out in August. Apparently it is the start of the Northern Lights season. I've never seen them in August before, and in fact I didn't actually see them this time either. Unfortunately I was asleep And the following night, when again it was forecast that they were going to be out, I tried to stay up. I think I managed to stay up till about 10:30. And I think it was midnight before people were actually seeing them. I spoke about the Northern Lights last time, and it is predicted to be a really good year. So I'm hoping once we get to kind of October time, when they're usually pretty good, we might get some good showings. Back at the beginning of June then, I was helping my TJ Frog staff, my hubby, photographing the Sky Half Marathon. We set off home quite early to get up to the start, which was about an hour away from us, and it was 7 degrees Celsius. This is June, okay? At one point, it went down to 5 degrees Celsius. When we finally got to the start point, it had thankfully gone up to 12 degrees. The clouds threatened, and although there was some rain while runners were gathering at the start, the sun did manage to come out during the race. Not quite the anticipated weather you'd expect for a summer event, although to be honest, it was probably good weather for the competitors. I was away last year and apparently it was a heat wave, and I'm sure if people had done both years, this was probably their preferred weather. At the end of August, we will be back photographing the Staffin Triathlon. And last year it was extremely wet and windy, horizontal rain. It was filthy weather. I'm holding out hope that it might be just a little bit better this year. And snowy summertime. Fortunately, not for us. Although again, back in early June, there was snow over on the east coast of Scotland, snow on some of the mountain peaks in the Highlands and on the Outer Isles as well. And July saw snow at Glencoe. Seasonal weather, it has not been. Summertime has seen us make a couple of trips to the south coast of England for work, family and friends. We had a family wedding in Cornwall at the end of June. And of course, you always hope that the weather will be good for a wedding. And yeah, especially in the summer, you kind of expect it might be. Our wedding many years ago was in summertime. We had two potential dates, one in July and one in August. We opted for the July wedding. Our summer weather was a torrential rain and thunder and lightning. We didn't let it spoil our day, but obviously it's not ideal. In fact, it was quite funny because as we came out of the church, the photographer asked if anyone had an umbrella for the bride, as everybody was just scarpering back to their cars. We just looked at the photographer and said, look, if you're happy getting your camera wet, then we're happy just standing here in the rain getting our photographs. I mean, the bottom of my dress was really, yeah, muddy and confetti and just a bit mushy and yuck. Having said that, by the evening, the rain had died off. The sun had started to come out. It was certainly brighter, but the green, the grass, the shrubbery, the little lily pond where we had some photos taken. I mean, it just all looked so vibrant where the rain had been on it. What would have potentially been our August wedding date turned out to be an extreme scorcher of a day. Uncomfortable heat, glaring sunlight. And although rain would not have been what I would have chosen, I think we were better off with it than the brilliant sunlight and scorching heat, which would have been extremely uncomfortable for everybody. Fortunately, for this year's family wedding, I think you could say the weather was pretty much perfect. It was dry, it was warm, it wasn't too hot, it wasn't too bright. It was a good summertime day. Here in Scotland, summertime brings the midges, the tiny, pesky, biting insects that thrive on our damp, warm, wet conditions here in the Highlands. You're okay if you're on high ground, on the move, or there's a breeze, but if you're around lots of trees, shrubbery, foliage, or you're by standing water, or you're stood still, they will swarm around you, and it's extremely unpleasant. Back in June, I joined my hubby's camera club on a private evening at Atterdale Gardens, which is an estate on the mainland at Strathcarran, just off the famous North Coast 500 or NC 500 route, as it's known around Scotland. I'd only been once before to these gardens about 15 years ago. And if you like gardens and you're in the area, I can definitely recommend them, whatever the weather. It's over 20 acres with a variety of trees and ancient rhododendrons, waterfalls, bridges, pathways. There's a Japanese garden, a fern garden, a kitchen garden, and a number of sculptures dotted around, which is quite good going around hunting for them. It was a treat to have the place to ourselves, and we thoroughly enjoyed wandering around with our phones and cameras, capturing shots of all these amazing parts of the estate. The Midges also welcomed us with open arms. I thought I'd prepared myself pretty well. I was in full waterproofs, walking boots, one of my knitted hats, a cowl, only a small bit of my face showing. And I still managed to miss a bit of skin with the midge cream and, yeah, got bitten. Be prepared if you visit in the summertime. Last time I was talking about birdsong and not being clued up on bird sounds and calls. And since then, I've had completely unsolicited from two different people recommendations for the app Merlin. I haven't tried it out yet, although I'm looking forward to using it as a way of improving my knowledge. And it actually came up as one of the topics of conversation with one of the photographers when I was out at these Attardale Gardens, because there was a lot of bird song there. And after talking about all the amazing flora on the last episode, I was totally disappointed by the foxgloves this year. Perhaps all the soil nutrients were taken up or worn out by the earlier incredible flora displays, or that unseasonal cold weather put them off. There just weren't the huge clusters we normally see in our corner of sky, and we didn't have any in the garden this year. Sadly, we had to cut down our gorse bush in our garden. I love gorse, and it was very random to have this in our garden bed. It had got really leggy with thick, empty, dead branches. It has remarkably, though, started to grow back, and I'm interested to see how that does. This summer I've noticed some really beautiful sedum along one of the stone walls, which I don't recall having seen there before, or certainly not the colour that it is this year, although that's not to say that it hasn't been there. It got me thinking about keeping a bit of a photographic garden diary, and I wondered if any of you do that. I haven't quite fathomed out how to do it, so I'd really welcome any suggestions that you have. How often you might do it? Is it once a month or once a week or once a fortnight or in particular weather, since we've been talking a lot about the weather? Yeah, let me know if you do anything to capture how your garden is growing and progressing and what it looks like at different times of the year. We're finally back into having a compost pile on the go. We inherited a very old, neglected one when we bought the property, and we used it a bit, but it wasn't in a great state, and the area it was in we wanted to repurpose. We've now moved it and started work, as I say, on a new one, and that feels really good. So far, fingers crossed on the whole, the plants in the wooden planters are surviving, although far too many weeds are cropping up around them. And that's my job as soon as the wind and the rain die down a bit, is to get out there and weed them. I'll be glad when the plants have grown a bit more and there's less room for the weeds to creep in. In the middle of June, I went on a juicing retreat. And yes, there is a weather connection here, bear with me. You will have heard me talking a bit about juicing this year, and after a couple of recommendations, I picked to go on this retreat with the Body Toolkit. Katrina started her award-winning company 10 years ago in response to her own health issues. And this six-day retreat was run at a private house at Glen Uig in the Scottish Highlands. As the crow flies, it's not that far from me at all, just down on the West Coast mainland. I was extremely fortunate that the day I went and the day I came back, the weather was kind, enabling the ferry to run, which meant I had a 25-minute ferry crossing from Armidale to Mallaig, and then just a 35-minute drive over on the mainland. The house was situated in a beautiful location, and it was one of those large country houses that wraps you up in a big hug when you walk in. It was June, and we were there for the summer solstice, Although summer, again, as we would think of it, it was not. Although in the end, I think this actually played in our favour. The course is about nourishing yourself, nurturing yourself, your body and your health. And with only 3 pints of juice a day and vegetable soup, water and herbal teas, you're in essence detoxing, with your body responding to flushing out any toxins that you would normally have in your diet, such as caffeine or refined sugar or alcohol. The unseasonal autumnal weather meant we could really lean into the relaxation of being in this wonderful house, tucked away, getting cozy, reading, chatting, resting, and gently taking walks in the woodland, on the hills, along the lochside paths and down to the beach. I think if it had been hot, full sunshine, it might have been a more uncomfortable experience and we probably wouldn't have rested in quite the same way. Somehow it just felt right to be a bit cooler outside and enjoy the warmth of this house. And as an aside, I too can recommend the course. At the end, it was the best I have felt in the last couple of years as I've gradually come out the other side of the fatigue experienced from COVID and the tick bite. On the spider front, well, let's just say the spider catcher is being used a lot at the moment, with these small black spiders that move in every direction like grease lightning. First, having been away a few days here and there, and with the unseasonal cold weather, I think they have taken up residence, searching for some warmth. I await to see what summer days we get as the year progresses. It's unsettled weather at the moment, with weather warnings for us. We have 50 mile an hour winds at the moment. There's been some sunshine. And as we look ahead to the next week, temperatures between 10 and 16 degrees Celsius. That's our summertime. Well, although it feels like winter right now, I'm really hoping that we do get some autumn, because that's usually a lovely time of year. All I can say at the moment, the only benefit of all this wind and rain is it's thrashing down the bracken, which you know is not my favourite. Creativity. It feels as though I've not done a lot of creativity this summertime, although my head is still full of ideas. Last time I was chatting about different needle types and my attempt to knit a pair of socks, where I'd started on long circulars doing magic loop and then changed to short DPMs. I was doing a pair of Stephen West socks with a lovely slip stitch pattern, which were cuffed down. I said I wasn't enjoying it and it wasn't the pattern, it was working in the small circle. Well, an update on them. I've frogged them. It was not the pattern in terms of how it was written. It was about me being a beginner trying to learn the sock structure technique, as well as deciding which needles I preferred and doing a slip stitch textured pattern. It was all too much. Interestingly, thank you, Caroline, your comment that you put on my Instagram that it's not easy knitting a textured pattern on socks really made me feel a lot better. So once again, thank you. Caroline also mentioned using small circular needles with one tip longer than the other. I thought again that was really helpful and I'm going to hunt some of these out. In the meantime, I've downloaded from Christine Perry, Winwick Mum, a basic 4-ply sock pattern, which I will attempt first. And many thanks to Lenore. Hi Lenore, I know you listen. Lenore knits a lot of socks and has unknowingly pointed me in the direction of Winwick Mum. My dreams then of being a sock knitter, always having a pair on the needles, are a little way off at the moment. I think I was being slightly ambitious. It might not be the weather here for summer tops, but that summer cardigan I'd started knitting last time with straight needles, then frogged as I waited for the circulars to arrive, is finished. Hey. I'm feeling quite chuffed with myself that I have a new knitted garment ready for summertime 2025. That's the first for me to be prepared for a whole year ahead with a new knit. It's designed by Sarah Hatton and it's called Capri, and it appears in the Rowan Knitting and Crochet magazine number 43. It was using Rowan Karma, which is now a discontinued yarn. It's a warm and soft yarn, 75% cotton and 25% acrylic. I bought it as it's what the cardigan was knitted in the pattern, and it was long before I knew how or had the confidence to substitute yarns. I'm not sure it's a yarn I would buy now if I saw it, but actually the feel of it, it's got a nice sort of squidginess to it. It's really nice, and the structure of the stitches is excellent. The style of the cardigan is, it's quite jacket-like. Very, very pleased with it, and it will look great with a t-shirt or a summer dress. It doesn't have buttonholes. The pattern actually used poppers, which I don't want to do. So at some point, I'm going to make myself a Dorset button brooch to just secure it at the top. I've noticed, probably shouldn't be surprised by this, that a common theme with me when I go away is I completely overestimate the amount of making I will do. I always take multiple projects. I tell myself it's because I want a variety of projects with varying complexity, but I think it's because I think I might run out and I just need to add that extra one in just in case. Does anybody else do this? When I went on the juicing retreat, I thought after the morning juice and the yoga and the walk, I had time and all these plans to be spending the afternoons and evenings finishing off all my current knitting whips, starting new knitting projects, doing a bit of tapestry, some colouring, sketching the countryside and the coastline, finishing my current fiction book, looking at self-development books, starting the next book, and so on. The reality, yes, you've guessed, not a lot got done. In fact, not a lot at all. I knitted about 2 inches of the back of the cardigan that I've just spoken about, and I contributed along with 2 other ladies to doing a jigsaw puzzle, and that was it over 6 days. I had faith in the juicing process that I wouldn't have food cravings or feel hungry because of what I'd heard about it. What I hadn't bargained on was losing my focus, my concentration. Obviously, our bodies are adjusting to a totally different diet and eliminating more toxins than it naturally would. I found I just wanted to rest without doing a lot of nothing. And that's what I mean about really leaning into it and how the comfort of that house really helped. There was conversations with others, and as I mentioned, we had this great jigsaw puzzle by John Derrian, which was called Painter's Palette, all these different colours, and I really enjoyed doing that. My mammoth knitting sessions didn't materialise. Despite not knitting much, I did keep a journal and a daily gratitude log, and we did vision boarding, something which I loved doing. There was an element of creativity happening, sifting through old magazines to see if any words or pictures spoke to me. And I decided that I wanted to think about my health in particular. But of course, you can do vision boarding around your work, your life, relationships, maybe what you want your next house to look like, all sorts of things. I ended up doing 2. I had one which was very focused around food, health, mind, exercise, and I've actually put that on the inside of one of our kitchen cupboard doors. It's a reminder about a whole holistic approach, the movement as well, the overall physical and mind health. And then the other one I've put on the back of my office door, which is about getting outside in the Scottish scenery, reminding myself of my main happy place, which is the beach. That's a way of focusing my mind. Every time I go out my door, it's there to make me think about the beach. I've got a lovely picture of Talisker Beach on this vision board, which was in one of the magazines, which was great. Talisker Beach is on Skye, for those of you who don't know. And yeah, that's really helping me, and I just need to actually get down to the beach a bit more. Although I said that sometimes when we slow down a bit, the days have been full with so many different things, and yeah, my making productivity low. I hadn't knitted for a long time because we've had quite a few campervan trips, and I found more and more I'm struggling to knit in the campervan. I think partly because the roads are just so busy, and you just seem to have your wits about you even more now. And I'm finding I'm kind of being that, you know, passenger driver more and more. I can knit scar to stitch and stocking stitch without looking down, but there's not much that you're going to be doing that still doesn't require some element of pattern changing, increasing, decreasing stitches or something going on. So I'm knitting less and less when we're out and about in the camper van, and I hadn't knitted for weeks, really, to be honest with you. A couple of weeks ago, I woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning and suddenly decided I needed to knit there and then. And I wanted to cast on the Shetland Wool Week hat, the Arlesborough Tory. Seeing as I have to knit two, one for me and one for my hubby, and Shetland Wool Week is rapidly approaching, it was clearly a good project to get on with. So yes, I got up, I set up a box set, and I started it. TJ Frog's staff wants his to be black and grey. I did this colourway for him on a previous Shetland Wool Week hat, which I think called for 7 colours, and in my stash I had 6, and that's what I used. This time there's 5 colours in the hat, and I've gone for 3, the black and 2 greys, because that's what I had in my stash. The pattern's a great knit, and I found it knitted up fairly quickly. I'm really pleased with how it's turned out. Now to choose the colours for mine. Originally, I was going to do Shetland natural colours, but unfortunately, I just don't have enough of them in my stash to do what I wanted to do. So it's back to the drawing board on this one. I might end up just doing 2 or 3 colours for mine as well, because I really do quite like the effect of that. At Shetland Wool Week last year, I bought the pattern and wool for the Mrs. Manson dress by Mandy Moore of Ollack Designs. And I've decided also that now is the time to start knitting it. I did a swatch and found my row count was off, and I was reluctant to do the maths to sort out how to change it for the decreases. I read on a few blogs and a few articles that recommended changing needles to work with a different material, and that with wooden needles, people tend to have a longer stitch than with metal. I've not heard this before. I gave it a try and it seems to have worked. I prefer working with metal, but for this project, it's going to be wood. I would love to have this ready for Shetland Wool Week. There's 50 odd rows of stocking stitch to do before the farewell. I might need to have a couple, or maybe more than a couple, of late nights to get this one done. I'll let you know. I've managed to book myself onto a workshop when I'm in Shetland for the Monday after Wool Week has finished, which I think is going to be a lovely way to wind down after I've finished all my work. The workshop is Fair Isle Knotted Basket Weaving with Eve Houston. The knotted straw technique is used in Fair Isle straw back chairs, and this is on the Critically Endangered Crafts on the UK Heritage Crafts website. It says, crafts classified as critically endangered are those at a serious risk of no longer being practiced in the UK. They may include crafts with a shrinking base of craftspeople, crafts with limited training opportunities, crafts with low financial viability, or crafts where there's no mechanism to pass on the skills and knowledge. I'm looking forward to learning about this skill and hearing Eve's own journey with this craft, and perhaps finding out more about what is being done to ensure that this can get removed longer term off that endangered list. Have you heard about the Emotional Support Chicken Knitting Pattern by Annette Corsino? I only heard about this in May when I did the knitting retreat in Italy. A couple of the ladies had knitted one, and I think the majority of the rest of us had not heard about it. And it was fascinating to learn about it. And I've been really interested looking up lots of different made up ones online. And I think there's a few different yarn shops and online yarn suppliers who have kits for this if you're wanting to purchase a kit. I was reminded of it the other day when Claire, who I follow on Instagram, showed a photo of hers. It's on my list to do, although I'm not sure of the reality as to when it will actually get on the needles. I'm going to sash dive for the yarn because I have more than enough yarn in my sash to do this. And I ordered some of the safety eyes for it. So I've got everything ready. It's in the queue. Away from yarn, I've just done a fusing glass workshop here on Sky. I went with Sarah, who I met through knitting during COVID, and we went up to the Store Glass Studio, which is on the Trottinish Peninsula, run by Roy and Jane. It was a full day's workshop of learning how to score and cut glass into various shapes, adding layers using different coloured glass and embellishments. And we made a couple of coasters, some star hanging decorations, and a larger piece. The pieces were all put in the kiln after we left, and I was sent back a photograph by Roy and Jane when they came out the kiln. They then had to go back in the kiln again for the larger piece in particular to get shaped. And the mould I chose was like a wave shape. I've just received them, and if you're on Patreon, you'll be able to see me opening up my efforts when they arrived back. In the jigsaw puzzle challenge with my dad, I have now received my next jigsaw puzzle from my parents. It's another 1,000-piece Gibson puzzle called The Secret Garden, and this was used in the UK national competition back a few years ago. It's a lot more colourful than the last one that we did. I see that this year the winning time for the elite group was 1 hour 15 minutes, and it was won by Sarah Mills, who's now won the competition 10 years running. Clearly some serious puzzle training is required to be completing a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle in times like that. We've yet to set a date for our challenge, but I will keep you posted as to how we get on. Dorset Buttons and wider news from the TJ Frog Pad. First up, some of you will have seen and maybe even listened to my first TJ Frog Chats With, which is in effect interviews as a standalone podcast episode. They are not numbered. Instead, they will all be named TJ Frog Chats With, followed by the name and business name of the person who I'm interviewing. And they will be released as and when around the usual numbered episodes, such as this one. The first TJ Frog Chats With was released on the 25th of July and was with Rev Joe Royal, who I last spoke to 6 years ago. And at that point, Joe was just off to train as an interfaith minister. It was fascinating to hear how her creative path has evolved since then and the life that she's carving out for herself. You will find the interview on my website, and there are show notes as well and a link to Jo's website. And Jo would love to see you if you're on Instagram or Facebook. She is there as Rev Jo Royal. And if you haven't yet listened to the interview, I would love you to go along and listen. Jo really is a fascinating person. In other news, my book, it inches ever further forward. There were a couple of extra pieces of material that I have been seeking. Fortunately, I have found some after further research in Dorset, and I'm deep in adding those into the book at the moment. The research did throw up another possible strand to include, which for now I've decided to put on hold for future use. It's hard to know when to stop. There is always going to be more to add, more museums to visit, more people to chat to. There is no one comprehensive collection anywhere, and I've reached the conclusion my book is a snapshot with scope for future editions. Recently launched is the Vogue Knitting Live next round of virtual workshops in September, and I'm delighted to say I will be delivering a Dorset Button workshop. It's on Friday the 13th of September from 10 to 12 Eastern Daylight Time, and it will be the cross-wheel design. If you purchase a virtual class with Vogue, you also have access to their virtual marketplace, and the classes are being recorded and are going to be available until the 30th of September. I look forward to perhaps seeing some of you there. And a week and a bit after that, I will be heading to Shetland for Wool Week. always a highlight in my calendar, and I'm thrilled to once again be a tutor for this and getting to spend time in this beautiful place with the opportunity to meet people from all over the world, as well as connect with people in Shetland I've got to know over the years. I'm running 4 workshops this year, and with one of the themes being natural coloured yarns, I've decided to focus on this natural colour range of Shetland wool for these workshops. The Dorset Buttons and Beaded workshops have sold out. If you're coming along though and have yet to decide on what you'd like to do, there are 2 places left on the Dorset Button Brooch workshop as I record, and a few more places left on the full day workshop, which is to design and make your own Dorset Button wall hanging. The latter is a new workshop specially designed for Shetland Wool Week, and it's going to be great fun to play around with all the natural coloured Shetland wools and all the variety of different stitches that we can put into Dorset Buttons. And it's going to be fun to see what people come up with. While on my summertime travels, I delivered a Dorset Button workshop to the Chorley WY. They're a very well supported group, and it was a lovely evening sharing the Dorset Button story with them and seeing their enthusiasm for it. Please do get in touch if you've got a WA group and would like to have a chat with me about a possible presentation, workshop or demo with your group. I am booking well into 2025 already with online groups and tour groups. Don't think it will be long before we start booking for 2026. I'm going to be running 2 virtual workshops in November, as well as another 1-hour Join Me With Your Dorset Button Kit Night. I'm waiting on a couple of other events to be finalised, and then they will go live on the website. Please keep an eye out on social media and on the TJ Frog updates if you subscribe to those, where I will be putting out further information. Sky Focus, the local lowdown. With a population on the island of around 12,000 and an estimation in 24 that we might see 1 million visitors coming to Skye, tourism is clearly a key part of the island economy. And of course, a lot of tourists will be here in summertime to take advantage of the long daylight hours to tour around the island and see the spectacular scenery. What might impact this then? Well, there's 2 commodities that we have in abundance that are sought after: the surrounding coastline, the sea, and the wind, which of course is perfect for fish and wind farms. These are hot topics on the island at the moment, and especially with those who do rely on tourism as their main source of income. Will tourists see this as an eyesore on the beautiful landscape that they flock to see? There are already wind turbines on the island, and love them or hate them, I'm sure many of the plans that are in the pipeline will be realised at some point. When we travel south down the M6 in England, there are some which come into view on the hills around Penrith, and I always think how graceful they look as they turn round in the wind. I can't remember them not being there, but of course they weren't always there. I understand both sides of the argument for having them and for not having them. Having something that size suddenly on your doorstep and potentially affecting your livelihood is very difficult. Community benefits are offered, and this is perhaps where communities have to try and get incredibly smart with these companies and voice what is considered a very good deal. The fish farms can offer sustainable year-round local employment. Of course, they also affect the views out from the hills over the coast. Yeah, it's a real contentious issue weighing up the different benefits and potential losses. Recently, a large communication mast went up on one of the headlands. It was strange at first, but now it feels like it's always been there. It can be odd how you get used to something quite quickly. It's going to be interesting, say, 10 years down the line, to see how many more fish and wind farms there are on Skye and how this may impact on tourism in summertime. That's it for this episode. Take care of yourselves. And in the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch, either drop me a line at tanya@tjfrog.co.uk or via the contact page on the website or on Facebook and Instagram as TJ Frog Sky and on Patreon as TJ Frog. The music is by Ron Paintant and is licensed from Melody Loops and called One Frog for a Prince. Bye for now. Until next time.